All right, get ready because we're about to take a deep dive into something pretty interesting, the Falco High Yield Fund. And this investor pitch we have is making some bold promises, steady returns, you know, in a world that feels like it's constantly on a roller coaster. Honestly, who isn't looking for a bit of, you know, stability these days? But what's got me really curious is the team. It's this wild mix of people. You've got heavy hitters from the industrial world, think like former General Electric execs, and they're teaming up with seasoned investment pros. So the big question we're tackling today is, can this fund actually walk the walk? Can they deliver those consistent returns even when the market throws a tantrum?
Yeah, it's a question that's on a lot of people's minds these days,
Yeah.
especially with everything that's been happening globally. Geopolitical tensions, supply chains.
Yeah.
And oh, and don't forget, interest rates bouncing around like a ping pong ball.
Yeah.
Investors definitely craving some predictability. And Falco is aiming to tap right into that need.
Yeah, they definitely seem to be going for a different approach. They're all about these alternative assets. Think aircraft fleets, turbines, even robotics, instead of the usual stocks and bonds.
You know, one thing that stood out to me was their focus on assets with steady, long-term revenue streams. That's got to be appealing in a market that's as jittery as a caffeine addict.
Right. Yeah, that's the idea. They're really leaning heavily on what are called asset-backed securities, and it's a cornerstone of their risk mitigation strategy. So essentially, the investments are directly tied to tangible assets. So even if the market takes a nosedive, there's still that underlying value, sort of as a safety net.
I see. So it's like having built-in collateral. But I have to admit, I'm a little skeptical. I mean, everyone talks about diversification and alternative investments these days. But are these asset-backed securities really all they're cracked up to be? I mean, are there any historical examples of this working during, you know, times of extreme market volatility? You're right to be cautious. It's not a magic bullet. But asset-backed securities have shown resilience during, you know, past economic storms. Take the 2008 financial crisis, for example. While many investments plummeted, some asset-backed securities, particularly those tied to essential assets like transportation and infrastructure, held up remarkably well. Of course, past performance isn't a guarantee, but it does offer some insight into their potential stability.
Okay, that is interesting. So it's not just smoke and mirrors then. But let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the people pulling the strings here. Falco is really boasting about this unique blend of experience on their leadership team, and they've got some serious names like Ferdinando Nani, Falco Boccalli, former CEO of GE International. We're talking about someone who's played in the major leagues of global industry, right?
Absolutely. Boccalli brings decades of experience managing complex industrial businesses at a global scale. And that's key because they're not just looking at numbers on a spreadsheet. They're dealing with real-world assets, planes, turbines, machinery. It's a whole different ballgame than just picking stocks.
I get it, but does someone with that kind of industry background truly understand the intricacies of the financial markets? I mean, couldn't there be potential clashes between the industry veterans and the financial experts?
Yeah, that's a valid concern. It's not your typical team structure.
Yeah.
You're right, someone like Beckley may not be a Wall Street wizard, but that's where the private equity and alternative asset folks come in. They kind of bridge that gap. They know how to structure deals and navigate those complex financial markets, and they translate Beckley's industrial insights into profitable investment strategies.
So it's like they're speaking different languages, but they've got a translator in the middle.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that's what makes this team so intriguing. They're betting on the synergy between those two worlds.
Yeah.
All right, I'm starting to see how the pieces fit together. But let's get down to brass tacks. What about these returns? They're throwing out target returns of 8% to 15%, which sounds pretty juicy in today's environment. They claim they'll achieve this by mixing income-generating assets with equity participation in growth opportunities. Does that sound realistic? Or are they just throwing out big numbers to lure investors in?
Well, those are definitely ambitious targets, no doubt.
Yeah.
And while their approach of, you know, blending steady income with growth potential is sound, remember, any investment carries risk. It's critical to look beyond those headline numbers and dig deeper. How will they find those income-generating assets? How will they identify and assess those high-growth opportunities? Those are the details that really matter.
Yeah, I was just getting to that. What really caught my eye is that this is an open-ended fund. That means investors have more flexibility to jump in and out as needed, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unlike a closed-ended fund where your money's locked in for a set period, an open-ended structure lets you redeem your shares at specific intervals, so it offers more liquidity. But it can also create challenges for the fund manager. They need to be nimble and adept at managing cash flow if a bunch of investors decide to pull out at the same time.
Interesting. So The flexibility is great for investors, but it also adds another layer of complexity for the fund managers to juggle. I'm curious, how common are open-ended funds in the world of alternative assets? Is this something unique to Falco, or is it a standard approach?
Well, it's less common than with traditional mutual funds or ETFs. Alternative assets tend to be less liquid, so an open-ended structure can create challenges. Falco seems to be banking on their ability to manage that liquidity risk effectively. It'll be interesting to see how they handle it in practice.
Okay, so we've got a unique team, an ambitious target, and an unusual fund structure. Now let's get specific. Where are they planning to put all this money? The presentation throws out a laundry list of sectors: aviation, transport, agriculture, commodities, and even machinery. They're also casting a wide net geographically, eyeing North America, the European Union, Latin America, and Asia. It's like they're playing a global game of risk.
Yeah, that global reach is a double-edged sword. Diversification can be a powerful tool to mitigate risk, but it also demands a deep understanding of the political and economic landscape of each region. Just look at the impact of the recent conflict in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. It sent shockwaves through global energy markets and had significant ramifications for investors.
You're right. It's not as simple as throwing darts at a map. Even with a diversified portfolio, you can't escape global events. I'm starting to see why experience matters so much here. I guess that leads to the next big question. How do they plan to make those tough decisions about where to invest and when to pull back?
Well, that's where their approach gets really interesting. They're emphasizing a data-driven process, scouring the globe for what they call sweet spot assets, and relentlessly focusing on that age-old mantra, buy low, sell high. Sounds straightforward, right?
Sure, it's the investor's dream. Buy when everyone's panicking, sell when everyone's euphoric. But how do they actually pull that off?
That's the million-dollar question. It requires impeccable timing, a deep understanding of market cycles, and the ability to identify undervalued assets before anyone else catches on. It's not for the faint of heart.
Okay, so they're aiming to buy low and sell high with these sweet spot assets, but doesn't that apply to any investment strategy? What's so special about their approach, especially with these less traditional alternative assets?
Well, that's where their combined expertise really comes into play. Remember, we're talking about a team with deep roots in industrial operations and restructuring. They're not just looking at financial statements. They're dissecting the underlying businesses, understanding the nuts and bolts of these assets, and identifying opportunities that others might miss.
I'm starting to see how their experience could give them an edge. But it can't just be about gut feelings, right? They mentioned something about a rigorous due diligence process. What does that actually look like in the world of alternative assets?
Oh, it's a whole different beast than evaluating stocks or bonds. They're talking about direct investments, like purchase and leaseback agreements, and partnering with specialized funds. It involves boots-on-the-ground assessments, technical evaluations, legal due diligence, and often navigating complex regulatory hurdles.
Hold on. They're doing all this themselves. I mean, they're not just handing money over to other fund managers and hoping for the best.
That's what caught my attention, too. It seems they're taking a more hands-on approach, which can be both a strength and a potential risk. Mm-hmm. On one hand, it gives them more control over the investment process and the ability to potentially squeeze out higher returns. But it also demands a lot of internal expertise and resources. They need to have a deep bench of specialists who can truly evaluate these complex deals.
Mm. It's a high-stakes game. And speaking of risks, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Every investment comes with risks, and alternative assets are no exception. What are some of the red flags investors should be watching out for here?
Well, one of the biggest concerns with alternative assets is their illiquidity. Yep. It's not like trading stocks where you can buy and sell at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
These investments can be difficult to unload quickly, especially if the market takes a downturn.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to sell off a piece of an aircraft fleet on a whim. But beyond liquidity, what other risks are we talking about?
Well, the complexity of these investments can be a double-edged sword. Right. It creates barriers to entry for competitors, which would be good. But it also means that valuing these assets accurately can be a challenge. And then there are the regulatory and geopolitical risks, which can be unpredictable. Think about trade wars, sanctions, environmental regulations. All of these factors can impact the value of alternative assets.
So it's not just about picking the right asset. It's about navigating a whole minefield of potential risks. Falco keeps mentioning their risk mitigation strategies. What exactly are they doing to protect investors from these potential pitfalls?
Well, they're emphasizing diversification, which we've already touched on. Spreading investments across different sectors and geographies is crucial They're also highlighting their expertise in financial structuring and their use of financial products to hedge against specific risks.
Financial products? That sounds a bit vague. What are we talking about here?
Well, it could involve anything from sophisticated hedging strategies, like derivatives, to more traditional insurance policies, or even strategic partnerships with other companies to spread the risk. The details are a bit sparse in the pitch, but it suggests they're not just relying on diversification alone, they're building in multiple layers of protection.
It sounds like they're trying to create a safety net, but even the best safety net can have holes. So with all these risks and complexities, how can potential investors evaluate whether Falco can actually deliver on those ambitious return targets?
It all boils down to trust, really. Do you trust their due diligence process? Do you trust their expertise in managing these specific asset classes? And do you trust their ability to navigate the choppy waters of global markets? Past performance can offer some clues, but it's not a foolproof indicator.
Right. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, especially in a world that feels as unpredictable as ours. They do mention some impressive figures from previous funds the partners have been involved with. But as you said, each fund is unique. So how much weight should investors really give to those past successes?
It's a data point, but not the whole story. You have to dig deeper. Look at the strategies they employed in those previous funds, the market conditions at the time, and whether those successes are replicable in today's environment. It's about connecting the dots and seeing if there's a consistent pattern of success, not just cherry picking a few wins.
Okay, so track records matter, but it's not a simple equation. What other questions should investors be asking to gauge the potential of this fund?
Don't be afraid to get into the nitty-gritty. Ask about their exit strategies for these illiquid assets. How do they plan to cash out and return profits to investors? What are the fees and expenses associated with the fund? How are they incentivized? And what measures are in place to address potential conflicts of interest?
Those are all critical questions. It's easy to get caught up in the excitement of potential returns, but understanding the downside is just as important, if not more so. So let's circle back to those targeted returns of 8% to 15%. They're pitching this blend of income-generating assets and equity participation in growth opportunities. Can you break that down for us? How exactly do those two pieces work together?
It's like building a house. You need a solid foundation and a structure that can grow and adapt. The income-generating assets provide that stable base. Think of it as your rental property portfolio. It generates consistent cash flow from lease payments, dividends, or interest. Then you have the equity participation and growth opportunities. That's your venture capital play. Investing in companies with the potential to skyrocket in value.
So it's about balancing those two approaches. The steady income stream provides some downside protection, while the growth investments offer the potential for those outsized returns. But as we've discussed, growth investments can be volatile. How do they plan to mitigate that risk?
That's where their expertise in due diligence and deal structuring becomes crucial. They're not just throwing money at any shiny new startup. They're looking for companies with solid fundamentals, strong management teams, and a clear path to profitability. They're also likely negotiating terms that give them some level of control and downside protection.
So it's not just about picking winners. It's about structuring those investments in a way that minimizes the risk of losing your shirt.
Okay, I'm starting to see the logic behind their approach, but let's zoom out again and talk about their global reach. They're targeting investments in North America, the European Union, Latin America, and Asia. What are the advantages of such a geographically diverse portfolio in today's world? It's all about managing risk and seizing opportunities wherever they arise. The global economy is incredibly interconnected, but different regions are at different stages of growth and face different challenges. By spreading investments across the globe, they're reducing their reliance on any single market and tapping into a wider range of opportunities.
I can see how that makes sense from a diversification standpoint, but doesn't global investing also come with increased complexity and risks? I mean, each region has its own political landscape, regulatory environment, and economic quirks. How do they plan to navigate all of that?
That's where their experience operating in different regions comes into play. They've assembled a team with global expertise, people who understand the nuances of doing business in different markets. They're also likely partnering with local experts and conducting in-depth due diligence to ensure they're not walking into any unexpected traps.
It sounds like they're trying to build a global network, not just a portfolio. But even with the best team and the best intentions, things can go wrong. Geopolitical events, natural disasters, unexpected regulatory changes. These are all factors that can derail even the most carefully crafted investment strategy. How can investors gauge their ability to adapt and respond to these unforeseen challenges?
That's where their track record and their investment philosophy become even more important. Look for evidence that they've successfully navigated similar challenges in the past. Have they shown resilience during times of crisis? Have they adapted their strategies to changing market conditions? These are the questions that can give you a sense of their ability to weather the storm.
It's like looking for battle scars. But not just any scars. Scars that show they've learned and grown from those experiences. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here. We've talked about their due diligence process, risk mitigation strategies, their global approach, and I even touched on their track record. But I feel like we're still dancing around the big question. Can they truly deliver those consistent returns they're promising?
It's the question on everyone's mind. And unfortunately, there's no easy answer. We've examined the puzzle pieces, their team, their strategy, their approach to risk. But ultimately, it's about whether you believe those pieces fit together to create a winning formula.
It's a judgment call, a leap of faith to some extent. And as we've discussed throughout this deep dive, it's a decision that requires careful consideration, in-depth research, and a clear understanding of your own risk tolerance. But there's one more piece of the puzzle I want to explore. Their data-driven approach. They keep talking about sweet spot assets and buying low, selling high. But how do they actually put that into practice? Is it all algorithms and spreadsheets, or is there more to it?
Their emphasis on data is certainly intriguing. They're clearly leveraging data analytics to identify potential investment opportunities, assess market trends, and evaluate risk. But it's unlikely to be purely mechanical. Human judgment still plays a crucial role, especially in the world of alternative assets where data can be sparse or unreliable.
So it's not just about crunching numbers. It's about interpreting those numbers and making informed decisions based on experience, intuition, and a deep understanding of the market. I guess that's where the art of investing meets the science.
Precisely. They're trying to strike that balance between quantitative analysis and qualitative judgment. And their success will depend on their ability to blend those two approaches effectively.
All right, we've dissected their team, their strategy, their approach to risk, and even their data-driven methods. But there's one more element of their pitch that I want to touch on, their vision. They talk about creating long-lasting impact and creating a benefit to society. It sounds almost altruistic for an investment fund. Are they just trying to appeal to a socially conscious investor base? Or is there something more to this?
It's an interesting angle, and it reflects a broader trend in the investment world. Investors are increasingly looking for opportunities to align their financial goals with their values. They want to support companies that are not only profitable, but also sustainable and socially responsible.
So it's not just about making money, it's about making a difference. But how does that translate into their investment decisions? Are they sacrificing returns for social impact? Or can they achieve both?
That's the million-dollar question. It's easy to talk about social impact, but much harder to implement it in a way that doesn't compromise financial returns.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they balance those two objectives.
Yeah.
And whether they can truly walk the walk.
I guess time will tell. But it's an intriguing element of their pitch. And it speaks to the evolving landscape of the investment world.
Absolutely. It raises the question of whether we're entering a new era of investing, one where financial returns and social impact are no longer mutually exclusive.
That's a thought-provoking idea, and perhaps that's the most compelling takeaway from this deep dive. We've explored the nuts and bolts of their fund, the strategy, the team, the risks, but ultimately it's their vision that might be their most powerful asset.
It's certainly a vision that resonates with many investors today, and whether they can deliver on that vision remains to be seen.
I guess we'll have to keep an eye on them and see how their story unfolds. But for now, I think we've squeezed every last drop of insight out of this investor pitch.
We've dissected it from every angle. And hopefully, our listener now has a much deeper understanding of the potential and the complexities of the Falco High Yield Fund.
Okay, so we've really unpacked Falco's strategy. We scrutinized their team and even kind of poked at their vision for the future. But has this deep dive actually answered our original question? Can they really deliver on their promise of consistent returns in this crazy market?
I think we've definitely explored all sides of the coin. They're presenting a compelling case, no doubt about that, a unique team, an intriguing strategy, and a commitment to data-driven decisions. It's all there.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, it's still a gamble like any investment.
Exactly. And we've laid out the potential pitfalls, illiquid assets, complex valuations, those looming geopolitical risks. It's enough to make even the most seasoned investor a little queasy.
True. But, you know, there's also that spark of innovation here. That willingness to challenge the status quo, that's hard to ignore. I mean, they're not just repackaging the same old investment strategies. They're venturing into uncharted territory.
Yeah, you know, that's what keeps me coming back to these deep dives. It's not just about finding the next hot stock tip. It's about understanding the bigger picture, the forces shaping the future of finance.
I think that's what makes Falco so fascinating. They're like a microcosm of that larger shift happening in the investment world. This convergence of traditional industry with cutting-edge finance, this growing emphasis on social impact, it's all playing out right before our eyes.
It makes you wonder, are they ahead of the curve or just riding a wave of hype? I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, time and those all-important returns. But even if Falco doesn't become the next investment juggernaut, I think they're forcing us to ask the tough questions. Like, what does a balanced portfolio look like in this new world? What role do alternative assets play? How do we measure success beyond just dollars and cents?
Those are questions every investor needs to grapple with, whether they're considering Falco or any other investment opportunity.
Absolutely. And I think that's the real value of this deep dive. It's not about giving you a thumbs up or thumbs down on Falco. It's about equipping you with the knowledge and the insights to make your own informed decisions.
So as we wrap up, I want to leave our listener with one final thought to chew on. We've explored Falco's approach to achieving consistent returns. But in a world that's constantly changing, is consistency even the right goal? Maybe the real key to success is adaptability, the ability to pivot and adjust as the landscape shifts around us.
That's a really powerful insight, and perhaps the most valuable lesson we can take away from this deep dive. In a world that's increasingly volatile and unpredictable, it's not just about weathering the storm, it's about learning to dance in the rain.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time to surface from this deep dive. Until next time. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep investing in your own knowledge.